Okay, today's daf is daf Nun Gimel. We're holding on the bottom of Nun Beis Amud Beis. Rav Papa, he asked Levrei Be Abasura. Rav Papa wanted to get his son married off to a daughter of Abasura. We saw earlier Abasura was actually his own father-in-law. So it's interesting, he was marrying, he wanted his son to have a shidduch with his own wife's family. Obviously, it must have been from another mother, otherwise it would have been also. So apparently, he had another wife. But anyway, so he was going there to arrange the ksuva. So also the mechtav laktuva. So he was going to arrange the ksuva for his son. And obviously there were some rather intense negotiations in store over here, especially when it's his own father-in-law. How much money they're going to be giving is the dunya for his daughter, for his daughter to Rav Papa's son. Okay, so Shama Yehuda bar Marema, Rabbi Yehuda heard that Rav Papa was coming. So Nafak also is chazir. He walked out to greet him. Anyway, they're walking together to the door of Abba Surah's house. When they get to the door, so when they get to the door, Rav Yehuda says, I'm not going in. Listen, I'll see you later. Please, come in with me. Chazir lav in echel. Rav Papa sensed that Rav Yehuda was very reluctant to walk in. I assume that the reason that you're so reluctant is Mishum Diyamalei Shmuel Rav Yehuda. Shmuel told Rav Yehuda once, Shinda, Lo Ta'avi Be'abure Achsanta. Afilmi Brabish Labratav, Lo Yodia Maizara Nafik Mina. You should never be involved in a situation where somebody is working out a way that he can change the natural Seder of Yerusha. So he's trying to write a will. Don't be involved in such a thing, even where he's taking away money from a horrible son. The guy's like, hey, forget, I don't even know what happened to him. He wants to disinherit him and give the money to another son. Even there, you shouldn't be involved. Because you never know what kind of the grandchildren are going to be. It's not for you to change around the future. Well, Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted, that's what should be. V'koshi gave me brother Baruch. You should certainly not be involved in a case where a guy is giving money to his daughter, which will keep it away from his sons. Because the daughter wanted the daughter's inheritance. We saw was the issue yesterday. We were talking about what is the mokra, the chlal, for the takana of the whole Benin Dichrin. Benin Dichrin, it turned out, in a sense, was fooling with the Seder Anachalites. So, that you shouldn't worry about, says Rav Papa to Rav Yehuda. You shouldn't worry about that. Because in this case, this is also, you're doing the right thing over here. The whole halacha of Benin Dichrin is actually a girsa in the Shiltes that says, Hanami Takanta Diraisa, or that it's Diraisa, not Takanta. Because we really saw it was Merumas in the Posek of Yirmiyahu, so that makes more sense, because yesterday we called it Diraisa. Now all of a sudden we should change it to Takanta Rabbanan. I mean, that's not. Okay, but obviously he may be referring to the underlying logic of the Takana, as Rabbi Yochanan said, Mishum Rav Shimon Bar Yochai yesterday, that really it's not Chas V'Shol, we're going against the Ratzon HaTorah, it's from the Pasuk of Chunashim V'Olidu Bani U'Bonis. That's what we said yesterday, it's also the Ratzon HaShem. So, there's no problem. So Rav Yehuda said, no, it's still a problem. Because if I go in, then what you're telling me is that I'm supposed to be forcing him to give money. Hani milin didaita. The whole Indian of Benin Dichrin is if a guy feels like giving money to his daughter, we want to encourage him. But Lasri Nami, well, you hold it, there's a mitzvah to force a guy to give money. Oh, my lady, what are you talking about? To come in, I'm talking about the Ova, I'm telling you to come in and the Paskin he has to give. You're the Rav in town. Oh, I'm just saying, come in, sit down, you know, and should just be more mechubar, you know, it creates a little bit of pressure maybe, but not the end of the world. Velotas, I mean, I'm not saying you should say something. Omar Lay, he said, but if I go in, that itself is going to create a tremendous amount of pressure. He's going to feel that he has to respond to my presence by showing how generous he is for his daughter. If he's not going to give enough money, then he's going to feel bad. So then it's going to be as if I'm forcing the guy to give, and that's for sure you're not supposed to do. The most you could say is that it's all right to be involved, but over here I'm going to exert pressure on him. No, Rav Papa kept insisting, and please, it's important. So Rav Papa basically forced him to come in. He came in, but when he came in, he didn't want to be involved in any way. And Ishtik, he just sat there. Ishtik Biyasev, he was sitting quietly to make sure that there wouldn't be any misunderstanding. Of course, not only was there a misunderstanding, it was even worse than had he said anything, because Savahilu. Because Abba Surah thought, gosh, why does he look so down? Why is he not saying anything? He must be angry. He wants me to give more money. So he keeps adding money, hoping at least I'll get a smile out of Rabbi Yehuda. So Sovrar, you mirtach ratach. Boy, he's really angry. In the end, katzel koma dahavile. He gave everything that he owned. I mean, he just was so embarrassed. And he still isn't smiling. So he says to him, Ashton, Amimah Mishtaimar. What? You still can't say anything. Give a mazel tov. Chayi demar lo shavak midi lenafshai. I swear, I haven't left a penny to myself. So at last he says, I says, if you would have asked me, I would have said, the first amount that you gave was too much for me, as far as I'm concerned. Now you quadrupled it, I mean, for sure, but it's ridiculous. Oh, he says, so let me just change my mind. Now, how can you change your mind? I, says, these type of commitments are viewed as very, very powerful commitments. So Tosfos says this commitment, first of all, could be talking about that they already had gone through the Eretz, which case the whole reason for the commitment is because that you want this to go through. Maybe it's talking about afterwards, they were negotiating what happened this. Or it could be vice versa. Maybe this was at a very early point, and he wasn't at an early point, we're not sure yet that it's going to be going through with the Eretz. So, because he could still maybe change his mind and so on and so. But in any event, he says, let me change my mind. Oh, my lady, now wait a minute. Shavin Avshka Hadrana Lokamina. I never said to make yourself an Indian giver. I mean, you said you were going to give. You got to give. I know that's very racist, but when I grew up, I would give. So, you're stuck.
You can say
Gadlan
giving now.
Gadlan giving now. Boy, minay Rav Yemar Saba Mirav Nach. Mochrak Tuvata Leba'ala. How about in a case where a woman sells her own ketuvah to her husband? So what's the halacha over there? Do we say that yeshla ktuvat nindivrin in the case where she dies, so that anyway the husband inherits her and now has to pass on what it is that he inherited from her father's dunya, he has to give to her children. So maybe that's not affected by the sale. So yeshla ktuvat nindivrin, or do we say oh einla? Do we say since lemaisa she sold it, so it's no longer considered to be a yerusha? Because in selling the rights to the husband, so what's the point of if she dies, he'll inherit? And he already bought it. I mean, in any event, he gets it. So there's no din of Yerusha. The din of Benin Dichrin was that if the Baal is Yerusha, so then already he's going to pass it on to her children. But maybe the Mechira over here is included in this, included in the sale is what would eventually would have been Yerusha if she had died. And therefore, I mean, obviously they'll get some of it, but they'll split it evenly among all of the children of the father's estate when he dies. Omale Rava, why exactly are you asking this case? Why can't you ask Tiboy Lecha Mochelet? I mean, it's a rare thing. A woman sells it so much, she's like, wants to go into her own business, so she needs cash. Husbands want to give her cash. So, okay, I'll sell you my son. It's a rare case. I mean, a Mochelet, fine. That's already much more Matsui. Guy wants to sell a field. He's afraid that the people won't buy it. There's a lien on it. So she could be Mochelet too, but we'll talk about it later on. So that's much more reasonable. Over here, you're asking an unusual case. Oh, Marley, no. You're missing the point. Ashtem Mocheret Kami Boile. The Alpha God, the equal of Meir Zuzi Ansua. Look, I mean, a woman doesn't sell the ksuv unless she's under pressure, obviously. So, Damina Kamande Kamachlo Meir Uchli Buchla. It's like a case over here where it's clear that she certainly does not really want to get rid of it. But it's like you're beating her with a cat of nine tails. And Uchla is a strap that has a metal piece at the end. It's like it's she's being beaten until she's ready to sell. I mean, that's the same idea of anybody who's under tremendous financial pressure. So then she sells, but it's not the point that she wants, like, who cares? She sells specifically those elements that she needs to sell. The elements that she needs to sell is this, what's going to save the husband in this case, which is Mocheraslo, the money that otherwise he would have to pay out. What does that have to do with the B'din Dichri? If she dies, so then anyway he would be Yorisha. It's not as if she's just saying, whatever the heck, just take it all. I mean, why would we say that? And nonetheless, I'm questioning what the din would be. So a Mochelet, we're over there, we don't see any pressure. Okay, she says, you know what, I don't care so much. You don't care so much. You don't care so much. So as the Pshat is just saying, okay, you know, whatever you want. Whatever you want is the Pshat that I don't need to come onto your Yerusha. So you're letting me own the Ksuvah. So then if that's the case, there's no B'din Dichrin, because there was no Yerusha from your father's house of the Nedunya. So over there, I mean, Mochelet Biboy, I'm basically asking over here, forget about what Shkiach or not Shkiach. I mean, I'm asking a case, even, over here I have it sad to say, that maybe once she sells, she's ready to go on. Omar Rava. Rava himself says, let me tell you, first, there's two extremes, and there's a middle that I'm misupik about. It's pshita li, that if she's mocher ketuva la'achirim, yesh la ketuva v'nindich. She sold her ketuva to other people. So what's the meaning of selling the ketuva to other people? The part, obviously, that she would have had a right to. So she's saying, in the event that my husband dies, or in the event that my husband divorces me, so I'm selling you the rights to get whatever it is that I would get, right? I mean, obviously she can't sell the part that's supposed to go. If she dies, it's supposed to go to her husband. So in that case, obviously, yesh levaniach, there she has already knulat b'nin dichra to her children. Because what's the change? I didn't sell anything that's nogeya the husband, in which case the husband's going to inherit me. And why would I say that she's mochelet the ksuba? She's not. She's very, very serious and about the ksuba. She needs the money desperately. And Zuzi on Anasua, but she certainly is interested in the ksuba. On the other extreme is the mochelet ktuba labala, where she basically says, you know what, send them. Whatever will be, you know, you keep the ksuba, which already means that she's really not concerned with the Yerusha element. She said, let her, if her husband was going to be Yerusher, so she might as well let him have it now. So there, of course, there's no ksuba has been indicted, as far as I see it, says Rava, because she obviously doesn't care. My time, she's giving away the ksuba biyad rechava. But what I'm not sure about is mochert ktuva labala, where obviously it's not as if she doesn't care, it's as if she's not makbid. She's basically selling the ksuba. It's as if she would sell it to other people, but she's selling it to her husband. So selling to a husband, I mean, on the one hand, you could say that it's with the same akpada of mocheret lacherim dami, and that in her mind, she's sequestering the elements that would have gone anyway to the husband, Beirusha. What does that have to do with it? That's not worth any money to him. I'm not selling that, and therefore, there's still been indifferent. Or on the other hand, in her mind, it could be just like a, you know, what the, if I'm already selling whatever I'm going to get out of it, so then it's his. In which case it would be the equivalent of mochelet. That's the shaila that I have. So this, I am unclear about whether we go according to the same din of mechir that we've had lacherim dami, or do we go according to the fact that it's being done to her husband, and therefore it's kimochelet lebaal adam. Bater debaya hadar pashta. So again, let's just review the issues over here very clearly. The woman in her ksuva has a number of different issues that she has to think about. First of all, obviously, she has the ikar of the ktuva, and she has the tosefet, whatever he added to it. And that area is not the main focus that we're worried about over here. We're worried about the things that she brought in as an adunya. Those things that she brought in as an adunya that are with sham in the ketuvah, and the husband says, ah, gefaldik, and I view it as if you brought in kach v'kach. Those things he inherits if she dies, and those things are given to her children above and beyond his children. They get a special tzus for those things that's not split with the other children in the estate. That's the benim dichrin element. Now, there's also the question in her mind whether that's going to ever happen. Because if Lamaisa, her husband, dies, or if her husband divorces her, that all comes to her. So there's a tzad in which we're talking about over here, a bond like any other bond, that has in it a condition. So you sometimes are willing to buy a bond with it, and you analyze, obviously, the market value of such a bond. So you'll say, I'll give you 10 cents on the dollar if it looks like a lousy situation. So over here also, as the Gemara Makkos goes through, there's a whole way of analyzing the value of the ketuvah. But obviously, if I'm going to buy a ketuvah from her, in my mind, I'm thinking, look, the only way I'm going to make any money out of buying this bond is if her husband dies before she, or if her husband divorces her. So I have to analyze, how old is he, how old is she, or the actuarial table. So if I do it in an intelligent way, I'll make myself a statistical analysis. What are the chances am I collecting? And I'll pay accordingly. If I view it as a 50% chance, I'll pay her 50% of the value of the ksuba, right? So that is cash value for her. Because at any point that she wants to, she can sell her ketuvah for that value. Obviously, she can't sell something she doesn't own. So that if in the end she dies, the husband is still going to inherit her. Now, on the surface, since the husband is still going to inherit her, her act did not affect Benin Dichrin, because Benin Dichrin is based on the Tanai of the Ketuvah, which only goes into effect, obviously, if she died first. If she died first, the husband inherited all of that property, and now he's going to give that property when he dies to her children, and not to his children from another woman, correct? So on the surface, her sale of the cash value of her ketuvah has nothing to do with Benin Dichrin because it didn't affect what was being given on the other tzad. If she would die, doesn't affect it because she was only selling the question if he would divorce her or he would die. Nonetheless, the Gemara here is clearing what exactly would be the halacha, what would be the impact of a sale on Bnei Dichri? Why should there be an impact? So if she's giving away the ksuba to her husband, it's true that you could say that she is a very skilled businesswoman and understands that there's two completely separate components, and she's only thinking about the part which had cash value, and that she's being mochelet. I mean, but the other way of looking at it is that basically the act of bechila means she's saying, look, I'm mivateret on the ksuva. It's, what do I got to wait till I die that you should have the property? I don't care about the ksuva. We've lived together so many years, you know. I'm no longer interested. Good. If that's the case, so it means that the husband, for all intents and purposes, is now the official owner of the nedunya without a yerusha. But if there's no yerusha, then there's obviously no benin dichri, because the whole point of benin dichri is that we take the nedunya that the father gave her and we split it among his heirs, ultimately his grandchildren. Right? That was the whole idea. There's no such thing. Okay, that's one side of the mochelet, which Rava says to me, it's obvious that that's what's happening when she's a mochelet. How about the other way around, where she actually goes to the market, puts her ksuva up for sale as a bond in the bond market? Over there, says Rava, there it's obvious to me that we're focusing on the critical question of the value of the ksuva in the event of her husband's death or divorcing her. And therefore, in her mind, that has nothing to do with the nedunya. It has nothing to do. All of that is talking about if he doesn't divorce her, she dies, not if he dies. So one has no effect on the other. That's clear to me. The only question that I have, says Rava, is the middle area, where a woman isn't being mochelet stam, she's saying, I don't care. She needs money for whatever reason. She's dying to go to Africa. Her husband absolutely refuses to take her to Africa. I'm going to spend all that money just in order not to eat and to live in a tent instead of being in a hotel or in my own house. We're showing it up inside. So she decides she's got to get money. The old man ain't going to give her any money. So she goes and she says to him, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you. You take me to Africa, and I will, under those circumstances, I'm mochelet the ksuva in exchange for that money. So that's basically, I'm selling you my ksuva for a trip to Africa. Okay, so what is this? What is she thinking? Over there, we could say, okay, but I mean, that's the same as any other sale. Or was David, no, it's not the same as a sale. There's one she's already selling to her husband. So she's basically being the vateret on her rights. So it would be the same thing as a mochel. That's all. So basically, we're analyzing over here not the legalities, but rather the psychology. Obviously, it would be possible, no matter what I pass in here, to articulate that that's not the case, and then we wouldn't be dealing with the psychology. You could say beferish, I'm selling you only X, the rights to, if you die or divorce me. I am not selling you or changing anything about the dinim of the nedunya. Whether that's absolutely fine, that's perfect. If he wants to change the amount that he's paying, that's fine too. So therefore, we're only questioning over here the psychology. Okay, so this is Rava's question now. What's the halacha? Barter the buy other pasha after raised the issue. He then comes to his own conclusion that a mocheret ktuva la'ba'ala kimocheret la'acherim dami. He finally came to understand that lamaisa, if she's reduced to this having to sell, so then it's not mechila. Having to sell is she wants value in return, and she knows exactly what she's giving away in exchange for exactly what she's getting. And therefore, we do not view it as a way of her being mezalzelet in her rights. It's the same as mocheret la'acherim. She never sold anything that she didn't own. And therefore, there's no mechila ben indifferent, because the property is going to be inherited by the husband exactly as it would have been before the mechila.
If she sells her ksuba ahead of time, on the market value, but if she would die, and eventually, you have to pay it.
He only has to pay if he dies, or if he divorces her.
Somebody buys this thing, it's worth nothing.
Why? Is it worth something to her? Can she collect if he dies?
No, but if she dies first...
If she dies first, she gets nothing. That's why he's paying her only a percentage of the value.
So the guy who buys the ksuba...
He's taking a risk. Exactly. So he's going to buy it cheap. It's worth it for me to buy this maybe for 20% of the value. That's right. You're gambling. Obviously, you're not aware of the bond market. You could buy this kind of stuff. You can call up your broker and buy these kind of things for a penny, for a dollar. That's right. You can buy life insurance. That's right. Actually, it's one of the best possible deals. If you make a deal with a person, it's best possible deal. The guy's 95 years old. He's still got an insurance plan. It's costing him $30,000 a year. He can't afford it. You buy it from him. You tell him, I'll pay the $30,000 a year, and I take half of it. I'm going to say, he's already 95. You figure, you know, you're going to collect pretty soon, and you're buying $500,000 worth of insurance for $100,000.
Yeah, but she could get sacked. There's a guy in France who bought a house.
Yeah.
She's 60, and she she's now 110 and he's still paying her?
No, no, he isn't.
I saw that case.
Oh, he died. His kid, or his kid.
It could happen. It could happen, obviously, but it's a good deal, basically. Statistically, it's a good deal. He has a great, great story. Okay. So there, that's the way I see it. It's amazing the level of sophistication of the dealings and the psychology and the awareness and all these tables and so on. It's just astounding. You know, nowadays people, like, they're used to reading about this type of instruments. I mean, we're talking about financial instruments thousands of years ahead of their time, which the market and so on is like understood so clearly. It's beautiful. What's the Rebbe Barov? So Rebbe Barov asks for the Meita. Ein Yorshim Shel Zeh, the Ein Yorshim Shel Zeh, Yorshim Ktuva. We had a famous case where you've got now a woman who went ahead, got married now, and her original husband turns up, even though she was relying on the report that he had died. So this was a disaster, and she gets no Ktuva, and not only that, but there's no Ktuva that's given to her children, not from her first husband, not from her second husband. Terrible, terrible situation. So now, we ask, what do you mean? There's no ksuva. So how would her children be yorish a ksuva that doesn't exist? What ktuva? To which Rav Papa replied, Rav Papa explained in that sugya that we had back in your moments, the Omer of Papa, of course what the Mishnah is referring to is ktuvat b'din bichrin. That what we're referring to is that even though she doesn't get her ksuva, you would have thought, but what about the ksuvas b'din bichrin? So either her children from the first husband should be yorish, or from the second husband should be yorish kamashba, and even that not. So now why not? I mean, basically, the fact that she went ahead and got married to the second guy, I mean, isn't that at least the equivalent of financial pressure? There was financial pressure. If there's financial pressure, then we understand that we need to separate out the issues of the monetary value and the financial pressure and the elements of the nedunya, which he still doesn't want to be mevateret on. So over here, when she goes and gets married to another guy, I mean, that's a lot more than financial pressure. That's an immense physical need. Social need. I mean, that's the biggest onus imaginable. So we could say Yetzer on her. Yetzer or her. She needed a man, and she needed to get married. So she went ahead and got married. I mean, it doesn't mean that she lightly dismissed her rights. It's that she needed to. So whatever she needed to do in order to get married, she was willing to do. But why in the world, because of that, should we say, even though she took into consideration, okay, I'm not going to get anything out of my husband if it turns out that the original guy is alive. Fine. I'm Mivateret. Mivateret on the rights of the Ksuva. What does that have to do with the Benin Dikrin, which is really her property? So why don't we say over there also that there should still be Benin Dikrin? You're telling me we should separate out the issues of Iksuva. Okay. So she doesn't get the Meah, she doesn't get the Matayim, she doesn't get the Tosefet, she doesn't get the Mezainas after, whatever you want. But Benin Dikrin, that's hers. He says, well, you're right. But Atam Knasu, the Katsura Rabban, remember that the whole point over there was that we create an extremist situation to deal with the extremists of the Yetzer Hanzer. In other words, she's got to recognize that she's taking an immense risk, not just on not gaining what she never had, but on losing what she already does have. That's the point. So what are we going to say? Well, you know, you'll still get the Benin Dikrin. So she's not going to feel that there's a big risk. The whole idea over there is we're trying to be makil on a woman who doesn't know if her husband is dead. We're trying to make it easier for her to rely on one aid or to make certain on her own. Okay, but in order to do that, there have to be safeguards. That's the safeguard, right? So that has nothing to do with our circuit. That's not a question. Bechlal. Yosef Ravin Bar Chanina, Kameda Rav Chisda. So Ravin Bar Chanina was sitting there learning in front of Rav Chisda, and he hears Rav Chisda saying, V'yosef Kamar Mishmeda Rav Yalazar, Mochelet Ktuvatala Ba'ala, Ein Mizonot. We've been talking about the Tanai of Benim Dichri, and we said that Mechila was, okay, you can own already the things. Not only does she Mochelet, including in the Mechila, it's na'eat tuva abnidich, and the husband now becomes the equivalent of a lokeah. But she even is mochelet her rights to mizonot in case he dies. I'll tell you one thing. It's a good thing you quoted Rabbi Elazar, because I never would have believed you. I would have told you that is the most disgusting psak halok I ever heard. A woman is kind enough to be mochelet to service and her husband should be, so because of that, she should starve to death. She has the gutskai, she's a fine-hearted person, and therefore, he should not have to feed her out of his estate. It's outrageous. Meshiv ra'a tachat tova, lo timosh ra'a mi beto. We should apply to such a horrific situation, we should apply the Maimer and Mishlei. Somebody pays back bad for someone who's trying to help them. He should always have bad in his home. What kind of, that's what you're saying. Yosef Reb Nachman Ve'ula Va'avini Ve'arif Papa Ve'yosef Reb Chiya Bar Ami Gabay. Now, what once happened that Reb Chiya Bar Ami was sitting by a place where people would come to ask shailas, and there was Reb Nachman Ula Avini Ve'arif Papa, were all sitting there, and indeed somebody comes along to ask a shaila, and he says, listen, it was Ota who gave a certain guy comes to Shechiva Arusato. So his Arusa had died. He had never married her yet, never taken her into the Chuppah yet. So basically, what was the situation vis-a-vis the Ketubah? Since we saw that an Arusa has Mono Matayim, Mitakonas Vesden, that's what we were passing all through the Masechta so far. So the question that was being raised was, who's Chayev in the Kvura? Now, but Pashtas, we said, that the Kvurata is Tachak Ketuvata. That was with the list of things that we had, what we give to her in exchange for what we give to him. So we said, look, it makes sense that if she dies, and therefore now he is ending up with the ketuvah, so it only makes sense that he should be the one that's responsible now to bury her, because she did him the kindness of dying. So, I mean, it's like a trade-off. Right? So he's benefiting from the fact that he's at least we think at this point, that he's not paying out the ketuvah. So therefore he should at least be kovar. Now that's not really true. The truth is that the kfura comes in exchange for his inheriting the value of property in the ketuvah, not for not paying out the ketuvah. But right now the Gemara doesn't know that. So they told him, look, what you should do is, I mean, one or the other. Either you go and bury her, or pay out the ketuvah to her heirs. I mean, but this was an exchange. You were given the ketuvah in order to provide for the chiyuv of burial. If you're not going to provide, so then pay up. Oh, so the Priya, who was sitting there, said, oh, well, hold on, gentle. Look, yeah, to Nina. It says, Beferish, Ishto Arusa, Lo Onein Velo Metamein. Let's say this guy has now an Arusa. She dies. He does not get a din of an Onein that prevents him from eating kachin. And if he's a Kohen, he's not Metamein. He's also to be Metamein for him. Furthermore, V'chein Hi, Lo Onenet, she also doesn't become an Onenet, that she's allowed to eat kachin. Velomitam alo, this obviously there's no isser of tumah, but there's no chiyah on her to take care of his burial needs. Meta enau yorsha, if she dies, there's no yerusha of an adunya. As we saw, an adunya only get a schustu after the actual chova, or at least at the point where now it's already the masir we spoke about earlier, we're calling him the chosim. But the mashmaut, and meta enau yorsha. Meitu goveh ketuvata, goveh ketuvata, and if he dies, she still has the ikar of the ketuvah. So taima, the meitu. In other words, the analysis here is somewhat. The only way, what we're saying is, since he dies, so therefore she's goveh, but ha meitahi, ema ketuvah. It's clear from there that if she would die, there is no ketuvah. Why is there no ketuvah? My taima. What's the reasoning over here that there's no right for her to demand now, which would end up being the schus of the kfura? There's no such right. Why not? Omer Hoshaya, because why don't we say, there's two ways of looking at it. Why don't we say, did you save money? You saved yourself 200 zuz. So pay out 10 zuz for a kfura. I don't understand. I mean, isn't that the exchange? So, why don't we view it that way? Omer Hoshaya, because he didn't save money. Because he was never chayav in this money. If you'll notice, the original language of the ketubah was, and Einani Koreva, I'm unable to apply this language in this case, which reads, "Likishetinasi la'acher titli mashikatuv lechi." That if I die, then when you go and get married to somebody else, you collect this ketubah, and up until that time, you're living off of the estate and so on, right? In this case, that never happened. She dies. Obviously, she can't go ahead and get married to somebody else, which means that we don't view the ketubah as being an extant chiyav, and now he gets to keep the money it was chiyav. It simply never went into effect. That's the point. And since it never went into effect, it went into effect, but we're letting him keep it, and now we're going to exchange the kfura for it. It never went into effect. Since it never went into effect, it's not an exchange. The exchange would only be if he's getting something, and he doesn't get that as an arusa, because he will not collect a yerusha from anything that was set aside while she's still in the state of arusa. Therefore, Tainiz Reb Chiya, how did you tell this guy that he's got to bury her or else he's got to pay out the ketuvah? It's not true. He does not have to pay out the ketuvah, because there was never a chiyah to pay out the ketuvah, and therefore there was no exchange for the kfura. I will say there was money that she had brought in, he's going to have to give that back anyway, because he doesn't get the yerusha. Therefore, your psak is a mistake. Kiyata Ravin, so when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he brought, when they used to come back from Eretz Yisrael, they were, now we got some serious halacha, you guys, it's wasting your time here in Babel. Let me tell you He quotes Rish Lakish as saying, Arusa Shemeta Ein La Ketuva. You should know that if the Arusa dies, there's no Shibud at all, even for the Manu Matayim, and therefore, obviously, there'll be no Kvura and so on. So Abaya heard about this big deal that Ravin is making with this halacha that they had just figured out over here on the street corner. So he says, Amrilo Abaya, Zil Amrilo, go and tell Big Shot Ravin that Shkila Tivutek, you could take the big favors that you're bringing us from Eretz Yisrael, and Shadiach Hizri, go throw them out on the thorns. Kfar Tirgamar Rav Hoshaya L'Shmait Tei B'Bava. We figured this whole thing out from Rav Hoshaya and explained the whole thing now. And this is done on a street corner. Ha-ha! So therefore, next time you come, bring something more intelligent back home.
Man,
they were very sensitive to being looked at as second-rate citizens. Right? We live in Bavel. They always used to laugh at the B'nai Bavel. Laugh, Kinderlach, you know. B'nan Nukvin, the next case that we had. Okay, so now we've gone through the B'nai Dichrin, the Tznai of B'nai Dichrin, and we've seen how to separate out B'nai Dichrin from the other issues of Iksuva. We've spoken about where there would be an impact upon B'nai Dichrin. We've gotten an insight into the nature of the way that it has to work as a process of Yerusha. We've come to understand that therefore it even has similarities to the dinim of Yerusha on the surface. That doesn't really make much sense, but that if it's a daughter, the daughter's not going to inherit, and yet even if it's a daughter among other daughters from another woman, nonetheless it still won't inherit. All kinds of interesting sort of compromises that we made in the mechanism and in the tzura of B'nai Dichrin. Fascinating halakhas that we went through, and now we're up to the next Tanai of the Ketuvah, which is the case of B'nan Nukva. So here we have the halakha, in which a person, whether he writes in the Ketuvah or doesn't write in the Ketuvah, is responsible for taking care of the mizonot of children, female children, that he has with this woman after he dies. We had earlier, of course, the understanding of the diak, that this is only when he dies. That it's similar to B'nai Dichrin, and that it doesn't imply a chiyuv while he's alive. That whole discussion where we talked about whether there's a takanat usha, that even when he's alive he has to take care of it. We spoke about the difference between children up until the age of six, which we're going to see more of later. And the question that is immediately raised is, till what age is this clause effect? How long does he have to take care of his female children from this woman as part of the Tznai of the Ketubah out of his estate? Now, Rav Tani, the way that Rav read the Girsa, the Nusach over here in the Mishnah of the nature of B'nan Nukvan, is that the Tznai read, the way we have, Artetilakham leguvrin, until such time as they will be married to men. Which seems to be saying, however long it takes them to get married, I'm going to be taking care of their needs, of Mizun. Levi Tani, Artetig Bagran, until you grow up, not until you get married. Now, we're going to see later on that this cannot be meant literally. In other words, it's not shayach to say, as we'll see later, that Rav would be saying, even though she already is a bogeret, that she will keep supporting her until the age of 35 when she finally gets around to getting married. That we're not going to say. So you certainly can't mean, L'Rav afagav de bogar. So according to Rav, we're certainly going to limit it until such point that she's a bogeret. And the lady, what are we going to be saying? That even though she went in and got married when she was 10, but nonetheless, he has to keep supporting her until she's 12? She's got a husband who's supporting her. I mean, neither of these pshatim and neither Girsa makes sense. You can take it literally. Ella, I mean, what you're going to have to say is bagar velo insi, the insi velo bagar, kuleyam velo plige. Okay, they cannot be arguing as what it appears. The one says until nisuin at whatever age, and the other one says until bogeret, no matter if she's married or not. That's absurd. So it must be a given that everyone is agreed that either of these two events, whichever comes first, cancels the chiyuv of mizonah to the daughters. So if she gets married, she's married, let her husband take care of her. If she grows up, she's grown up, let her take care of herself. Where then is the machlokes? Ki pligi ba'arusa v'lo bagar. The question is this. She now is not a nesua. So she's still, if the father would have been alive, she still would have been in rishus of the father. He's supposed to be the one that's going to be bringing her to the chuppah. She's an Arusa. And the Chaintani Levi b'matnitei. Levi wrote in his own set of brayot. Remember, just like at the time that the Shulchan Aruch was written, there were many alternative Shulchan Aruchs that had been written at the same time. Yeah. It was Rav Yosef Karo's that caught on. Of course, other people wrote about it. It's not where the paper's written on and so on. Those were the competitors.
It's not the day.
Well, it wasn't really fun. Period. But He used the cachet of tzvah. In any event, the same thing happened by the Mishnayos. I mean, by the Mishnayos as well. Bar Kappor had his own Mishnayos, but by the Brisos, even after Rebbe's Mishnah was accepted, there were many alternative sets of Brisos. In the end, we say, look, if it ain't Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia stamped on it, we're not interested. Okay. Levi had his own, also set of Brisos on the Shishas and Rebbe. In Hiddus HaRashi, his Masber, when it says we might need paid in his own personal Brisos, in Levi's analysis, and therefore he puts this into his composition of the Brisos, that it should say, he had a very strange language, until you grow up, the yamtis manehon de intzivan, and it comes time for them to actually be nesuot. What do you mean? Tarte, I mean, you can't have both things. No, I mean either achatibagron or yamtis manehon le itnasavan. Where it becomes time now, what has become time now? Comes time is adding a new point, a very interesting new point. Remember that the Masechta began with the concept of giving a time. What was the time? 12 months from such time that the Orus says, okay, I'm ready to go to the Chuppah. So we're giving you time to prepare. We understand it takes 12 months to prepare. Shisha Hadashim Hashem Hamor. Takes 12 months to prepare. Nowadays, a little longer than some people. They just try to compress it into the 3 months. 12 months of work. And at that point, if he doesn't perform, see, he's going to have to support her anyway. So therefore, Levi incorporated that case in his Braita, so that once it reaches the time, now if she doesn't get married, that's her own problem. She should have accepted the support of the Orus at this point. And that's the maximum that the father has to pay for her out of his estate. And the truth is, Kitanoi, that machlok is about the status of the Arusa that we just had between Rav and Levi is an old issue. Ad matai habat nizonit, it says like this. Until what point does she get now her mizonot from the estate? Ad sheteares, until such time as there's kiddushin. Mishum Rabbi Elazar amru, ad shetibager. She continues, even though she's an arusa, she continues to get support until she's a bogeret. Tani Rav Yosef ad diyahavyan. Rav Yosef had a strange language in the brises that he was taught, and it said, until she will be. Now, Havaya, there's Havaya Kmekicha, and there's Havaya, which is Chuppah, as we've seen in the past, Yibarilo. And we asked about Rabbi Yosef's Brayta. Does that mean Havaya de Erisin, or does it mean Havaya de Nisuin? He really didn't know. Omele Rafistel Rabbi Yosef. You know, you learned by Rabbi Yehuda. Mishmir lachaminei de Rabbi Yehuda, Arusa Yeshul Mezonot. Did you hear anything from him about this issue? What did he hold about Mezonot for Arusa? So Rabbi Yosef said, well, I got to tell you, I've never actually heard from him myself. Mishma lo shmiyali, but I can tell you, Smora. Mismora letla. I think it's reasonable to say that there's no point in providing for her from the father's estate. Why? Because kivan di irsa lo nechalai de titzal. Lamaisa, once she is already an arus to somebody, what are we going to say? Let's stop supporting her. What's going to happen? She's going to start banging on doors? And that we said, the whole point is, we've got to support her that she shouldn't be banging on doors. Her chassan's not going to like the fact that his kala is going around banging on doors. So Lamaisa, he'll end up taking care of her. So why should we say that was an assumption that she's going to get from the estate? So let him take care of her, even though it's not Bechiyev. Lamaisa, he's not going to feel it's appropriate for his kala to be running around, so he'll take it upon himself. That's what I would say. Omar Lay, so the Rav Chista said to Rav Yosef, look, I asked you if you heard from Rav Yehuda, okay? In Mishmal Shmielacha, if you didn't hear anything, then Mitzad HaSvora, it's the exact opposite of what you're saying. Don't tell me what you're saying, ask for your Svora. I mean, Misvora Ifa, it's just the opposite. The Svora is, unless you heard otherwise, that she should get Mizonot. Why? Because Kimed Elohim Lay Begava Lo Shadi Zuzi Bechti. The point over here is when the guy goes ahead and gives her the kiddushin. Remember that there's always, like we saw in the Gavin Din of Achilas Truma, there's always the consideration that maybe I don't know everything I ought to know. Remember that old hand coming from her belly button issue. You never know what she's got, and therefore he's not quite sure that this is really going to happen. All kinds of stuff may yet show up, and therefore he's not going to start throwing money out for nothing to start providing for her because she doesn't have an income. Yeah, the chosin, but when we get to the chuppah, then I'll know I'm really the chosin. Right now, I'm still keeping my options open. That's what I would say, in which case, mitzad asvora, it makes sense that the father is going to continue to provide for her until such time as she has a reliable source of income. That was one description of what happened, what transpired in the conversation between Rav Kista and Rav Yosi. Now, others have this conversation the exact opposite. Igri Amri Omarle, others say that at the point that Rav Yosi responded, he said, I didn't hear Mishmalo Shmili, I didn't hear from Rav Yehuda, but I would say Misvara Itla, she should still get money from the estate because Kibbet Elohim LaBegavalo Sharizuzi Bichti. The guy, the chassan, is not going to help her. He's not going to throw his money out for nothing because he doesn't really know yet everything that he's going to know about her. I mean, that's like what happens in modern day engagements. You get engaged, but we understand all kinds of new data is going to come to light and nobody's ready to put money on a bet that an engagement is going to end in a marriage. I mean, they canceled a marriage the week before too. So therefore, I think she should continue to be supported from the estate. Marley, in this version, Rav Chista said to Rav Yosef the opposite of what he said in the first version. He said, you never heard directly, I didn't ask for your opinion, because Misvara is the exact opposite. I would say Misvara, let like even the ear salonechal editiza. Because once she has a chosen, he's not going to let her basically be looked at as a nothing. You're going around begging money on street corners, selling flowers. So therefore, the reasonable is the what in the first version was what Rabbi Yosef said. By the way, it's an interesting simon that's coming off over here. It's a simon de gavri. Simon de gavri means we want to know who the five mandiyomrim are that are going to be discussing the following questions that we have. So the simon for them is sak zorach, the guy stung his sack. And then we flip into a simon of, in that order, the questions that will be raised, which is the question of Mayana, Yivama, Ashnia, and Arusa, and an Anusa. So we have, he went ahead and sucked Zorach, and then Mayana, and then he was Mayab in the second one, and he went in Arusa, and then he raped her. Strange story, or whatever it is, it's a sin. Bohemi name Rav Sheshes. And Rav Sheshes, of course, was the shin of the Sak Zorach. So Bohemi name Rav Sheshes. What would be the din of a Mima Enet? Yesh no Mizonot or Ina Mizonot? Is the halacha, Lagabi Amima Enet, where the basically she had been now married to a guy. The father had died. She had been eating off of the estate. Her mother, her brother, went ahead and accepted kiddushin to somebody. So obviously they stopped feeding her. She's been married now to another guy for 3 years. She's now 11. And she decides she doesn't like him too much. So she's remanded. She walks out. She comes back home. If she comes back home, does she get her old room back or not? Do we say that this is included in mizonos? Do we say, look, I mean, the bottom line is she left. I mean, she was married, technically speaking. Or do we say, what do you mean, married, technically speaking? I mean, and it cancels the marriage retroactively. The whole thing is annulled. So she should still be the Beit Aviyah. That's my question. Yesh la mizonot, o in la mizonot. Omalu Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes said, look, I mean, that we can derive very clearly from the following. Almana beveit aviyah. Ugrusha beveit aviyah. Vishomerat yavam beveit aviyah. All right, or rather, yeshla mizonot. In all these cases, you have mizonot. So as long as she is in a matzav in which she is back beveit aviyah, so then in these cases, all of these cases are clearly mina erisin. Obviously, once there's nisuin, there's no chiyav, there is no beit aviyah. That's the meaning of the word beit aviyah. So she's still the beit aviyah, so that her husband died before they ever got to the chuppah. And in that case, she's supposed to be fed. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, oda beveit aviyah. No, 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 wait a minute now. She has to be beveit aviyah. Then she has mizonot. But if not, ain't no beveit aviyah, ain't no mizonot. Isn't that what the Tanakhama just said? Isn't Rabbi Yehuda just repeating what the Tanakhama said? Elalav, the only way to understand the machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama is the difference is a mima enet ika benai. The Tanakhama savar a mima enet is also the Beit Aviyah. And therefore, Itla, was Rav Yehuda says, wait, Oda Beit Aviyah, I mean, she never left. A Mima Enet, as opposed to all of these other cases, where she's an Almana, Grusha, whatever, Yavama, where the original husband had died before, Tenya Terchopa, she never left the father's Rishus. I'm telling you, says Rav Yehuda, it is only in these circumstances, where she never left the father's Rishus for somebody else to go and to be supporting her, there, she is still nizonet from the estate. But if, for the past 3 years, somebody else has been taking care of her, even though you might say, technically speaking, we now annul that retroactively, bottom line is, she's not odah beveit aviyah, she's left. They gave away all of her clothing. Somebody else is in the room, obviously. First thing they do, they'll rent it out to someone. So she's gone. The old Billy Elliot joke. I already rented your room. You're out. There's no way to change your mind. Okay, so over here, that is the answer to your question, Rav Sheshes. It's about Chokas, Rav Yehuda, and the Rabban. Tanakhama Savar. Yitla, Rav Yehuda, Savar. Okay, the next of the Simen, of the Kuf, of the Sak, is Reish Lakish. So that's Kuf. And what he wanted to know was the second one of the questions of the siman, a bat yivama, yesh la mizonot or ein la mizonot. It's an interesting thing. Guy gets married, dies. His wife now gets married to his brother as a yivama. She has a daughter. Now, the thing is, they never wrote a ketubah, because the halacha is a yavama, she doesn't get a ketubah from the yavam. Her ketubah is the original ketubah from the first marriage. Now, my question is, if the second husband, the yavam, dies, does that daughter that he had with his yavama get the support of the estate or not? What's the question? Divan diyamam ha-ketubah tanik say ba'ala rishon ulevla. Do we say that since the ketubah is supposed to come from the first husband, and therefore, that interesting, what exactly is the question? We'll talk about it in a moment. The Tosfos understands, since the definition of the Tanai HaKetubah is female children that we will have together will be supported. And he never had female children together, obviously, or she wouldn't have been a Yavama. So he never had
the daughter from a previous marriage.
Well, by Yavama, yeah. By definition.
Yeah, by definition.
No, what do you mean? A Yavama from the new marriage, but not from the original marriage. The opposite of what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. This is a third husband.
No. You postulated here something that was not unnecessary. This was only her second husband. Her first husband died, leaving her childless. Now she got married to his brother, and now she has a child.
Oh, okay.
Now he dies.
Oh, yeah.
So now the question is, look, the first guy... I mean, he wrote, again, this is a possible interpretation, that does a very interesting interpretation. What he wrote is that our female children are going to be supported. Now, he never had female children. So although he can say, which is what we do, that whatever money he owed her is not transferred to the second guy, or his brother, and now it's going to be taken from the value of the estate of the first guy, but something that stipulates openly that only if it's our child, maybe that doesn't apply.
Is it the whole point of your mama? If they bring a child in the name of the first brother.
That okay, that's the...
Huh? That means a boy.
But that, why? That only a boy.
Shame.
No. Yes, sir?
If she doesn't collect the ketubah if she's getting older. If she's married to the second brother, correct? She doesn't collect at that point in time.
Of course not.
So what if the first husband has given her ketubah way above the norm? Does the second husband have that responsibility?
He has no responsibility at all. That's what we're saying. She doesn't get a ksiva from the second husband. She gets whatever ksiva she originally had. So, and it's still on the original estate of the first husband. So do we say, since we say ketuvah talmik se ba'ala rishon letla, or dilma kiman di'i letlan rishon takina la rabbana misheni itla? Or do we say that it's not only, we remember that we had back in Yevomis, and we had it here too. We spoke about what happens if there's no money. The first one dies without leaving an estate. So we still have the problem of lo te kalab einav lo hutziyah. In other words, it's like bilas or bilas nus. So therefore, we make a takona for a yavam also to give a ketubah. Does that takona include the question of benot nukban, or only extend to that particular issue, shelo te kalab einav lo hutziyah, which is the other way of learning the question over here. Straightforward, like the lashon is mashma, which is, if there's no money, forget about we're not analyzing it. It's as you all said. If this is the daughter that is the result of the evil, that's the equivalent of it being my daughter. That wasn't the issue. The issue is, he doesn't leave any money. He didn't leave any estate. So do we say in the same way that for the woman herself, we establish a new ketubah, if there's no estate that was left from her first husband who died, that we will establish a ketubah from the second guy? We'll also establish the tna'ei ketubah from the second guy. Or do we say that what it is that we do from the second guy, the yavam, is only enough to cover the actual ikur ketubah? Above and beyond that, there's no takana. But he didn't have anything. That's the question, if we learn it this way. He didn't have anything. Not only did he die childless, he died money without money, propertyless. That's the next question. Take that too. We don't have a clear-cut riot. Boy, Rebbe Elazar, how about a bat of a shniya? A guy goes and he gets married to one of the Isurei Darabanan, and he has a daughter, the Isur. And what is the halacha in a case where he dies now, and is there a din of mizonot or not? So yesh la mizonot or ein la mizonot? The halacha is over there. There's no ketuvah. She, because it was done by Isur, Darabanan, and not mitakin ketuvah. And therefore, she herself, as an almana, would not get mizonot either. But what about the daughter? Do we say, even the letla ketuvah, letla mezonin? Do we say, look, I mean, you can't have a chiyuvah that's na'eya ketuvah if you don't have a ketuvah? Oh, Dilmar, do we say, now wait a minute. Of course every woman has a ketuvah. If you did an isser, we'll take away the ketuvah from the person who did the isser. But I mean, the child is not the child's fault that he did an isser. So why should we cancel the ketuvah for her?
The child isn't the mamzer.
No, of course not. It was only an isser rabbanah. Oh, Dilma, ima, the mother, the of the isura, consula rabbanah. So there, the rabbanah. There's a knas that she doesn't have the rights to the ketuvah. But over here, she died. She's been dead already for 40 years, maybe. Now the father dies. Now the question is she going to get mizonah? There shouldn't be 40 years. Or probably the child would have to be above 12. So the law of the Isura, this child now who never did an Isura, lo kansura rabbanim, maybe there's no knas, and we still have the din of a non-nukva table. That too is a question. Boy Rova, I got another issue. Bat arusa, yeshla mezonot o ima mezonot. And when we know that an arusa has a tznai bezdin, has a ktuva of either mana or matai. So do we say, kima de itla ktuva itla? Do we say that, okay, I mean, obviously, normally, you're not supposed to be sleeping with your fiancé and having children with her, but he did. So now the question is, that ketuvah that was made for the mother, does that also include mizonot for a child that may be born before they ever get to the chuppah? Oh, Dilma, kima de lo takina rabbanan ketuvah, shat nisuin? Or do we say, since the rabbanan didn't have a takana to write a ketuvah with all of its na'im until the actual marriage, in other words, so over here, even though you'd say, okay, but in this case, they had a child together, for heaven's sakes. I mean, the Rabbanu would certainly include the care of the child, which is part of the Tanya Ketuvah, in the cases where they had a child before the Chuppah. What would be the din? Or do we say, look, but Lamaisa, there's no Takana until the actual Chuppah, so therefore Letla, Teiku, this we also don't know. And the next case that we had that was questionable by Rav Papa, but I just want to get to the last of the simonim over here so we can start another sugya tomorrow. Boy Rav Papa, bat anusa, yesh la mizonot ein la mizonot. Now, how about if a guy rapes somebody, and now he's a good boy and he goes ahead and he marries her, and lo yuchal shalcha, so now he's stuck with this woman, and they have a daughter. So now he dies. Does she get mizonot or not? So Alibah, remember we had in Machlokas earlier, Alibah Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Lo Dibar Lachat, Amar Yeshla Ketuvah Manah, but Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda held that even though she's an anusah and he can't divorce her, we still give her a ketuvah, and we don't say the knas that he pays is the ketuvah. Although she's obviously no longer a betulah, he made sure of that, but she's still a bu'ulah, and therefore gets a manah. So there, she's got a ketuvah like everybody else. I don't have a question according to him, but according to Rabbanan. The Rabbanan, if you recall, said, Yatza kesef knasa b'ketuvata. The money that he paid her already as his knas, that is the value of a ksuvah. So according to this, she doesn't have an additional ksuvah. How about the tna'ea ksuvah? So my question would be, kiva de letla ketuvah, letla mizoni, do we say that, look, there was no takon of ketuvah, there's no takon of ketuvah, so then there's no takon of agavi mizonot either. Actually, Tosus, I mean, asked, why can't we ask this about the woman herself? Why do we have to talk about the daughter of the anusa? This question can be raised even on her. He doesn't have an answer to that. So, Odilma, the reason that we said she doesn't have a ketuvah is why? Ketuvah time of mind. Remember we said that why write her a ketuvah? The only reason we write a ketuvah is k'dei shelo te'kala be'inav lehotziah, right? So, in this case, he can't get rid of her anyway. So, therefore, what's the point of writing her a ketuvah? The Torah says, lo yuchal l'shalcha ko yamav. But that doesn't affect the tenoia ketuvah. That only affects the logic of whether he needs to pay out if he's going to divorce her. Okay, that's why we don't give her a ksuvah. But doesn't that logic itself show you that, of course, the tznaya ksuvah, which has nothing to do with lote kalavayin of lotzia, but which define the nature of the mutual chiyuvim in terms of the marriage, why would we not apply the tznaya ksuvah? Or is it basically all one thing? If there's no ksuvah, then by definition we didn't make the additives. There's those additional tznaya ksuvah. Tznaya ksuvah affect a marriage only where there is the fundamental ksuvah of the mano matayim. This, of course, is a very, very yisodi question. Which do we view all of these things? We started just with the question of the Yerusha elements distinguishing between the Tna'ea Ktuvah that deal with, please pay attention to this, that deal with the questions of Yerusha and the Dunya, as opposed to the elements of the Ktuvah that have to do with payout in the event of his death or divorcing. Right? That was the initial question that we made. But now we have a more fundamental issue, really, that was raised almost as accidentally along with this list of other questions, which is the fundamental issue of whether, in general, tna'im of the ketuvah that are actually part of the chiyuvim, which is certainly mizonot, is included, has nothing to do with distinguishing between money that she brought in, which is irrelevant to the mizonot, and the Iker Chiyuvim, where he writes in the Ksuva, Va'anon, Ezun, Va'afanis, that goes on after his death also. That's Nayakura. Is that something that is linked to the etzem writing of a Ksuva, so that all of the Tznai Ksuva are meant to be one thing together with the Gufa of the Ksuva? Or the Chachamim basically have a set of issues that they want to put into effect that define the nature of marriage, and even where I don't need to write out one of them because it's N.A. In this particular case, it's not applicable. We're going to fill out now on your spreadsheet. And in the event of divorce, you just write, not applicable, because the Torah said, lo yuchal v'shalcha. There is no in the event of divorce. So what's the point? But what about all the rest of the things in your spreadsheet? Okay, how much resources? Those are applicable. Is that all one thing? And if one thing is not applicable, the whole thing disappears. That's a very good question that we're now raising and leaving it as a take-up. So this is like the ultimate. The other questions were questions about specific issues that have to do with knas, that have to do with extensions of the chiyuvim, not only to his wife, but to other people. Okay, there I can understand it, but this is the most fundamental of all the questions. You're talking about the ikar chiyuvim of the ksuba. Now this might have something to do with answering Tosis's question. In other words, maybe the Gemara, by saying we're asking about the daughter and not her, is telling us something, and that by her we wouldn't have asked the question. So that chiyuvim that go directly to her, that define the marriage, not only the outcome of the marriage, we weren't ready to ask this type of fundamental question. And there was no shaila about her ability to be supported by the estate, because that's what you got to do for a woman. It would be like asking, so since there's no ksuba, I don't have to feed her. That we didn't raise the question. So if we view mizonos as an extension of the relationship during the marriage when he's alive, then that would explain why we don't talk about her.